Welcome back to In Focus. And if it sounds like there's a little spring in my voice, it's because we've got one of our favorite guests here with us. Of course, it is Jane Paul from Early On, who is here to talk about early childhood education, as she does once a month. Jane.
Oh, you always make me feel better when you say things like that.
Well, spring has sprung, and really, it's a beautiful day out there today. And I know you're a big fan of the outdoors, and as am I. I'm wearing shorts. I thought you'd be happy to hear that.
Well, my daughter just got her new flip-flops for spring, and so there you go.
Excellent. Well, listen, there's a lot we're going to be talking, I'm sure, next month about outdoor activities and so on for our young ones, too. But you've got a great topic here today that pretty much every parent can relate to. Actually, every parent can, not pretty much. And that's why we step in to help when children are in distress. Now, these are things like the meltdowns, the frustration, the screaming, all those lovely things that drive parents right over the bend. And you wanted to talk about that today.
I do. I mean, as people know, we became new grandparents not too long ago. Our little gal just had her 2-month birthday. Aww. So we've been dealing with just every baby that's everywhere just catches our eye at the moment. You know, it's like when you buy a new white car and you see white cars everywhere.
Yep.
Well, we're seeing babies everywhere. And I mean, there are lots and lots of babies out to our playgroups. You know, having been home with COVID may have had something to do with that. But just we're getting so many questions from parents about, you know, my baby isn't sleeping. I put them down to bed. They're crying. Do I pick them up? You know, and we keep saying you cannot spoil a baby. You cannot spoil a baby. It's not possible. You are the adult in the lives of these little people, and you need to step in and help comfort them when they're in distress. And of course, we have so many babies. We have so many now sleepless parents as well, right? And the two is tough. So I think with this generation of parents that we're dealing with, and of course we deal with 0 to 6 mostly, there's just so much information out there. There's so much that they are given and they're trying to do their best. And some of the information is very conflicting that lately we felt like we need to get back to the basics, right? Just back to what really matters when you are a parent and you have kids. And so the biggest piece of information I guess I'm giving out these days is trust your gut. If you have a child in front of you, whether, like you said, a toddler melting down in the middle of the kitchen or a baby who's crying in their crib, and every ounce of your being says they need you, then they probably need you. Trust that gut. Go to them, pick them up, comfort them, soothe them. And we're going to talk about why that is, because I, you know me, I love the science behind things, right?
Absolutely. And you're right about the conflicting, you know, reports, conflicting advice, because unfortunately the internet has opened, it's opened the world to, you know, people who know what they're talking about and people who don't know what they're talking about. And all of a sudden one thing that's worked for one parent then has to work for everybody. And they spread the word as if it's gospel. And in reality, it really is, there isn't a one size fits all approach, is there?
Not at all. Every parent is unique. Every family is unique. And absolutely for sure, every child is unique, right? We're all born with a different temperament, which is how our body is hardwired together. And that's kind of what we're talking about today is that brain-body connection. So when we talk about kids being in distress in there and kids being unique, kids, yes, we're unique, but we're hardwired the same way towards stress. And I'm all about the stress. If we can manage the stress in our lives, everything goes better. So there's something called the dissonance cycle. And dissonance just means trouble, right? That things aren't going well. You're not feeling good about things. You're uncomfortable. Things are not good. So if you can imagine a circle in front of you, and at the top of the circle is a problem. So for, let's take those infants we were talking about. The problem may be that they have a wet diaper. So at the top of that circle is the problem. You go around to the side and the child sends a signal out, because this is a cycle, right, in a circle. The child sends a signal out. So what does an infant do when they're wet?
Cries.
Right, they cry. So that's the signal they send out to the world. If everything is going well, a caregiver at the bottom of that circle hears that cry and steps in to help. So what do? We solve the problem. We change that diaper, right? Then around the left side of that circle, that problem is solved. The child feels better and they get back to the top again when the world is okay. So that's the cycle. There's a problem. The child sends a signal. Caregiver steps in. The child feels better and we're back to the top again and in control of our world. So that's what we call the dissonance cycle. If that cycle gets broken, and usually where it gets broken is the child has no problem sending us signals. I mean, you talked about a lot of them, that toddler melting down in the middle of the kitchen floor in a temper tantrum, right? This time of year, one day you're putting on snowsuits, the next day you're putting on shorts, right? Kids getting dressed to go outside, all of a sudden don't want to put on snowsuits and boots anymore. That could be the problem. They have no problem sending us that signal, telling us they're not happy with what's going on. So usually the cycle gets broken between the signal and the caregiver stepping in. And when that happens, that starts to wire the child's brain for the world is a scary place. It's not okay. I'm not safe. It's not all right. If that caregiver steps in, we wire the brain very differently. If that caregiver steps in and says calming things, oh, you know, it's all right, I'm here. We'll change that diaper. Oh, you know what? I'll help you get those boots on. I know you're frustrated with them today. If they step in and help out a little bit, then the brain is wired for, oh, when I cry, when I give my signal, somebody's going to come and help. The world is okay. Life is all right. And we wire the brain for being okay, for being safe, you know, for being secure in the world and life is okay. So funny thing about the way we wire that brain, a baby's born with a billion neurons up in their brain. So if you think of a summer sky out in the country, when all, you know, all you look up and all you see is stars, right? When there's no lights around, that's the neurons in a child's brain. Your job as the adult is to connect those by allowing them to have experiences. And ones that are connected in the same way again and again and again form really strong pathways. We call them superhighways. The first time you have an experience, it's a little spider web connection. When that experience happens over and over again, it becomes really strong and really thick like a superhighway. We can actually measure them with electron microscopes. It's pretty cool. So when we wire those brains for safety and security and feeling okay in the world, then we get independent kids who can manage themselves in the world, who can go out and explore and learn what they need to learn without a lot of fear. When we have a brain that's wired because that dissonance cycle gets broken and they're wired for being scared and being uncertain and not okay, we get a very different brain. Whatever parts are wired with those super highways, those are our go-tos. So if you're wired for being scared and upset and the world is not a good place, that's going to be your go-to every time you have a problem. And we have all those meltdowns and we have upset just beyond the norm because kids are not feeling safe, not feeling secure. So when you step in and pick up that crying baby and calm them and soothe them, then they're okay. Then we have those nice, healthy brains that are open for risk-taking and experiences and going out and looking at the world and checking things out. So that's what we want to have. That's why we step in when those kids are in distress.
It's really interesting. You talk about distress and obviously like the diaper change and things that can genuinely upset them. What about when it's a situation of their own creation, like they're not getting something that they want? So you're looking at really helping them versus, and probably not the best used word, discipline, you know, or trying to set them on the right track. Like because the two, I'll tell you, they look pretty darn similar.
That's a great question. And this is where you're going to find out that I am a total hypocrite.
All right.
Because there are times when we have to step in right away. We don't wait. When that baby, you know, when that 3-month-old baby is crying in the crib, we step in right away. We want to make sure they're safe and sound.
Sure.
when a child is out there learning and getting frustrated, the way we step in really matters. So yeah, so with those little guys that are just beyond, we pick them up, we cuddle them, we calm them, we soothe them. But with our other guys, you know, those guys who are having trouble putting on those boots, right, because they just don't want to put them on, they want to put on their flip-flops and head outside these days and play in the water, then how we step in matters. So we're back to the age-old trusted stuff of make a connection first, always connection before compliance. So we're going to acknowledge those feelings. Oh, those boots are frustrating to put on. You'd really rather put on your other shoes today. So we make that connection and we acknowledge how they're feeling. Then we describe the problem. Sorry, bud, too cold today for those, you know, for those flip-flops. We got to be in winter boots and snow pants today. So we tell them what the problem is. And then this is the most important part. We put in the front of their brain what it is we need them to do. We call it a clear expectation. So it's kind of like this. If I tell you to think of an elephant, are you thinking of a zebra?
No.
Of course not. You're thinking of an elephant because that's what we're talking about.
Exactly.
When I talk about, you know, stop fighting me about putting on your boots, guess what's in the front of their brain?
Fighting you?
Yeah, fighting me about putting on their boots. So we need to flip our language around and we need to tell them clearly what it is we need them to do. I need you to help me get this boot on. Which foot are you going to put, you know, which boot are you going to put on first? So now we're thinking about which boots we're putting on first. So make sure your clear expectation is telling them what you need to do in this moment. Our toddler melting down in the kitchen, right? Because obviously we gave them the red glass instead of the blue glass, you know, heaven forbid. You know, we do the same thing. We come in there and we connect. Oh, you're really upset right now. You're so mad. You've thrown yourself on the floor. We describe the problem. That red glass is dirty, dude. Not safe to drink from, right? So we've made that connection by acknowledging their feelings. We accept all feelings. Feelings are not right or wrong. There's no morality. We put limits on the behaviors you're allowed to do when you feel like that, though. You're allowed to be frustrated. You're allowed to be angry. You're allowed to work through those emotions. But you're not allowed to hit me. You're not allowed to kick. You're not allowed to spit all those things, you know, throw things at the window, whatever. So we have to step in and tell them what they are allowed to do. When you're ready, when you're finished being, you know, upset and you're settled down a bit, then you can come and get the blue glass. Would you like milk or juice? Right? So we've told them they can't have the red one, but we've made that connection first. So how we step in there makes a big, big difference. And you're right, there are times when we don't solve their problems for them. There's a big part of learning in there when kids do get frustrated as they're trying things out. It's the four C's that make us capable of being in the world. Those are things like communication, collaboration, critical thinking, and creativity. That's all part of the learning. And often when they're learning, when they're working on those four C's, right, things go wrong, they get frustrated, we still can step in and do the connection, right? We can still acknowledge the feelings, right? We can still describe the situation, but sometimes we wait, and rather than telling them what they need to do, we're just there to support them in the exploration of what to do. So we're still stepping in. So maybe I'm not as much of a hypocrite as I thought, but we're still stepping in, but we're not always, you know, solving the problem for them. Sometimes we just come in with lots of empathy and let them know we see what's going on. We help them with the language because that will help them later on as they get older. But we don't always solve their problems for them, but we're there to support them.
At the beginning of our conversation, you said that there's a lot of new parents and there's a lot of tired new parents out there. And of course, that can lead to frustration. So, you know, we've all gone through it where we're just at the end of our rope. And the last thing that we want to do is to deal with a screaming child and trying to reason with them. And when we can't defer to our partners, maybe they're at work or maybe they're doing something else, we're left here with the frustration and the stress building up in us. What do we do? How do we cope with that?
So, you know, spoiler alert, we're talking about kids here because my job is parenting, right?
Yeah.
But this is, this same scenario is going through you at the same time. You have that same brain and body connection. So what did we do when our child got frustrated and upset and lost it? We calmed them down. We soothed them. So you have to figure out how to do that for yourself as well. I mean, a two-year-old can't always do that for themselves, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm 63, almost 64 here. You know, I've got a lot more skills in that area. Some days it's still hard for me, but we do things to reduce that stress, right? So we take a big breath. We blow it out. We tell our kids, I'll be back in 5 because I'm going to lose it right now. So I'm just going to take some time away for a second. Then we'll come back and figure out what to do, right? If your child is safe, you can walk away from them and do something just to calm yourself down. We just did Bounce Back and Thrive, which is a resiliency workshop. And it has 3 steps. You stop and recognize what's going on, right? You calm yourself down, you find some way to relax, and that can be taking a minute vacation, it can be breathing, it can be doing all sorts of things. We're a sports house here, so I may go out the back and kick the soccer ball against the brick wall for 2 or 3 minutes to get some of that energy and frustration out, because if you don't, you're no longer dealing with the child's problem, you're dealing with your problem. Right? You're dealing with your anger, your frustration. It's no longer about the child. It's about you and your reaction. So we stop, we calm down to relax so that we can rethink the problem and see what other options there are to deal with this. And sometimes we have to wait till that adrenaline and cortisol runs out of our kids before we can do anything if they're in a tough response.
Absolutely. Stressful. Yeah, exactly. You have to do it when it's safe to do so, right?
Right.
Yeah. That's great advice. And I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't lie to our listeners. There's no way you're 63 years old. but honestly, I think that you're speaking a language that a lot of new parents and even some parents are, you've brought them back in time today, back to when they were kids. And like you, a grandparent, you're now getting to share this wisdom with your own kids. And I think that is, that's pretty cool. My goodness, they're so fortunate to have you in their family.
Well, sometimes that information is much easier to take from other people than from your own family.
Yeah, I bet.
Having said that, we do have a YouTube channel people can check out, and we have short videos on there. And anytime you see my smiling face, you'll know it's about behavior and parenting and stuff. And there's one on there about stress and the science behind it. There's another one on resiliency. There's one on gauging cooperation. There's all sorts of little, 5 to 7 minute videos there where we talk about these things. So go in and check them out. The YouTube channel is Children's Resources on Wheels, which is what CROW stands for. So if you go to YouTube, type in Children's Resources on Wheels, and then go to the video selection. You'll see a bunch I've done. You'll see a bunch the other facilitators have done on Plato and numeracy and language and all sorts of great information in there.
What we're going to do is put a direct link up to that with this interview today at lanarkleadstoday.ca is where you'll find that. We just changed our website, and I keep forgetting.
I did not know that.
Yes, we did. Lanarkleadstoday.ca is the best place to get your information now in Lanark and Leeds, that's for sure. We are going to have that link, that direct link up there. But also, if people would like to get more information about CROW and early on in general, there's so many different ways that they can do that now, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. We have about 8 Facebook pages, one for each area within Lanark County. So with the playgroups, if you type in like Perth early on playgroup, you'll find them. Mine is CROW Parent Education. The main one, of course, is Children's Resources on Wheels. And you can also go to our website, which is crowlanark.com. And you'll find us all on there as well.
All right. Well, always great to have you here, Jane. Always incredible information that you're sharing with our listeners, and we really, really appreciate it. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Always a pleasure. I have a special favor to ask, though.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm going to do the ending after you've done your blurb about what's coming up next.
Yeah.
Do I get to say, Jane and Bob, have a wonderful day?
Absolutely. I've
always wanted to do that.
Okay. You're more than welcome to do that. Absolutely. So I'll get this part out of the way and then I'll throw it to you. Okay. So coming up tomorrow on In Focus, it's our weekly chat with the Health Unit Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Paula Stewart, will be here for our weekly Ask Dr. Stewart segment. And we'll also highlight another one of the Health Unit's department. Jane, over to you.
And this has been Jane Paul and Bob Perot with In Focus today. Have a wonderful afternoon.